The Athletic.
Craven Cottage, make some noise for the team of the Fulhamish Podcast!
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show that is brought to you by The Athletic UK. The season is done, but the podcasts keep rolling with plenty of Fulham action to get into. Today, we'll look back again at Sheffield United on Saturday, all the ramifications on that. Of course, we'll discuss brand new contracts for Tim Ream and Neeskens Cabano. Peter has written a list of all the credible Fulham transfer rumours, so he's going to be reading all 32 of those and counting.
I'm not sure about credible though, Sammy. I mean, it's just...
We'll also have a correspondence, and this will catch on at the end. I'm joined by The Athletic UK's Peter Rutsley. You already heard him. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Sammy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. And Jack Collins, hello.
Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. Hello, Peter. This is all very exciting. It's a silly season.
Silly season is back. How was the rest of your weekend, Jack? Last time I saw you, we were both feeling it a little bit on the train back from Sheffield, which was a very, very fun day. Obviously not the result we wanted, but it mattered little. It certainly did to me. I know there's some people out there who would have been annoyed.
Oh, I quite enjoyed my day out, to be perfectly honest. The football aside, I didn't watch all that much. I took the Don Betts approach, to be perfectly honest with you. As soon as the third goal went in, I was like, I think this game might be up. I wanted to see the Guard of Honour. And I wanted to clap the players at the end because this has been an unbelievable season. Aside from that, you know, Peter tweeted it, but it did feel a bit like the lads had just been on the piss for the entire week and had just rocked up at this game. It really did kind of make me laugh for a bit. Look, I imagine that the teams below Sheffield United, now I know Middlesbrough didn't win and nor did Millwall, so it wasn't, you know, to be a problem in the end, but I'm sure they wouldn't have been too best pleased with Fulham turning up and not being able to play in the manner that perhaps we usually do. But ultimately, it didn't hugely matter to us. The concourse was great crack. The Sheffield United fans seemed to enjoy the back and forth between the two clubs. They're in the playoffs, obviously. But, you know, it was a really good day. I had a great laugh. And ultimately, you know, it's been such an amazing season that I don't think anyone's going to take it too badly. But it wasn't the greatest performance on earth.
No, it was a very happy occasion, especially with Sheffield United doing well and Fulham being champions. It was one of those rare games you go to, Peter, where kind of everyone left the ground smiling, and that's seldom happens. What was the feeling amongst the players in Marco Silva before and after? Did you smell a difficult day at the races?
I think we sort of anticipated it might go that way, but I mean, you know, you have to maintain that sort of professionalism. And I suppose if you're going to be hypercritical, it wasn't great in the start. Although actually, no, the first 10 minutes were actually okay, I thought. And then it just sort of went downhill a little bit. And I think, you know, we can over-egg it a little bit. You know, it's not like they've been in a boozer for a week. These are still professional athletes. I think what also made a difference were the changes. I think, you know, when there were players in there who were a bit rusty. I think Michael Hector was pretty rusty. Gazzaniga came in as well. And I think there was a little bit of lacking that rhythm and familiarity, I suppose. But I mean, you train week in, week out. So couldn't have been that much of a difference. In terms of Marco's, you know, he's one of those managers who hates losing regardless of the fact that you've won the league and got 100 goals. So there was a bit of frustration out, but you can't be too annoyed about how it panned out. I asked him directly about whether it was the celebrations of the week and everything else that had played a part, and he said, you know, that's an easy excuse, but you know, and I know why this result has sort of happened. But you know, not the ending I think anyone wanted. I think it was a record breaking result. I think, well, not record breaking, but first team to lose that heavily since 1939, if you've won the league on your final day. So probably not the stat you want from your final game, considering what else was at stake, you know, in terms of getting more goals and Mitrovic scoring too. So one to scratch.
Jack, the only thing I couldn't quite work out is why he played particularly Hector. Like, maybe it was a case of he wanted to give him minutes, but I think we can be pretty sure that Hector's not going to be starting a lot of football games next year. I just found that a little bit of an odd sub. The only one I could understand was dropping the Welsh boys because they've got big things on the horizon and probably would be saying to Marco, I don't really want to get injured in a game that means very little. They've got a World Cup on the line. That was the only change. Gazzaniga, I could maybe understand. He might be our number two, might be our number three next year, but I'm just not 100% sure what Marco was trying to achieve with this lineup, which is a kind of hybrid of tired first teamers and second teamers that I don't really see have a huge amount of future here.
Yeah, I suppose there's an element of, you know, some of these players might have been unbelievably good in training for the entire season and not had the opportunity because the fact that, you know, Tosin and Tim Ream were so excellent for the season. You know, Michael Hector might have been training like a dream the whole year round, been an absolute asset within the squad. Heard people speak highly of his qualities in those regards before. And maybe this was a kind of, look, fair play to you. You've been, you know, such a good behind the scenes kind of worker this far this season. You know, I want you to go and start a game. I don't know. I'd imagine it's behind the scenes things as much as some others. But ultimately, again, like it's hard to worry about it hugely. Perhaps there was an element of looking at it and thinking, you know, go out and prove yourself. You know, do you want to be in this squad next year? Go out and prove it. And I don't think anyone made huge cases for themselves, let's be perfectly honest, although I'm probably not the best person to ask regarding, you know, how well people performed. It's just one of those that, you know, whatever happened in this game was going to mean little and less, I think, from our perspective at the very least, if not from Sheffield United's and definitely not from Millwall and Middlesbrough's as well. But you look at these things and you think, okay, if Marco Silva wanted to make some changes based on what he's seen, you know, during that training or just to reward some players who've waited patiently all season or, you know, to make these kind of claims, I'm not going to press it in a game that didn't mean anything. And I don't think that there was enough changes to warrant any sort of genuine criticism from other teams, you know, looking at the playoffs. I know that, you know, Bristol Rovers obviously had that amazing result where they won 7-0 against Scunthorpe, jumped Northampton. Now Northampton have asked the FA to launch a full inquiry into the fact that Scunthorpe changed 7 players and started at a bunch of teenagers, right? You don't want to invite that kind of thing on the club either. You don't want to invite an investigation. You just can't, you know, we don't need it at this point. We should go up heads held high as champions. So I think there was an element of let's not completely and utterly tear up the script, but maybe just reward some players who've done well behind the scenes. I don't know if there's any more to it than that, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, actually. Maybe it was that Marco wanted to make more changes, but also would have known in the back of his mind that you make too many, you get a complaint from Middlesbrough, who are not exactly against waging a fight in the courtrooms or with the FA if they want to, as we've seen this season with their antics with Derby County. So yeah, I think Marco Silva probably played it about right. Peter, they discussed it on the Monday podcast with George, Jack and Dan. Really lovely podcast, actually, if you haven't listened to them guys yet. Just looking at the playoffs, and it was a mixture of who you'd like to come up and who you think will go up. You've got Forest versus Sheffield United, you've got Huddersfield versus Luton. Your prediction for the playoffs, which start on Friday?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, there's some, you'd want someone who hadn't been in the Premier League for a while, I think. You know, you're looking at Luton and Forest maybe, but I think it's nice that Luton and Huddersfield are together for the semi-final, so at least one of them will get a crack at it, because I think Huddersfield have just flown under the radar completely in terms of discussion. I don't think people really talk about the job that Carlos Corberan's done there as much as they have, say, with Nathan Jones at Luton. Not to talk down what Jones has done. I think Jones has done a phenomenal job there. So one of those two teams will get a 90-minute shot at the Premier League, which is good. And the other semi-final is, that looks really tasty, doesn't it, between Sheffield United and Forest, you know, not too far apart in the old geography. And, you know, Forest, for them, it's after the Bournemouth game and getting close to automatics, it's how you recover from that. And obviously the draw at Hull, mind is definitely on the playoffs, but how does that affect them? And we've seen, we saw at the weekend, that Sheffield United still have that quality within the squad that got them to the Premier League before and could get them there again. They are a very good, well-rounded outfit. So, prediction, I think coming into it, you actually think maybe Sheffield United have the momentum, I think the winner of the Forest Sheffield United game will probably go up.
I am adamant that Huddersfield are going to win this.
Yeah, so am I, Sammy. I've been pushing this for weeks.
I just think they're so underrated, Jack. And as much as Sheffield United Forest seems like the obvious place for it to go, I just feel like, particularly if Huddersfield can get past Luton, I think that's the difficulty, because they could get swept away at Kenilworth Road. I could imagine that being a Luton win, because Kenilworth Road is so hard to go to. But if they can get through the two legs against Luton in a one-off game at Wembley, just remember the job that Huddersfield did on us. It was so impressive. And look, Forest have done a job on us. Sheffield United did a job on us. Luton did a job on us early in the season. These are all good teams that have actually proven themselves in various games against Fulham over the season. But yeah, my pick is Huddersfield. Seems like you're on the same page.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And to be perfectly honest, I would like the winner to come out of Sheffield United, Nottingham Forest. I think that would be the most fun thing to happen here. Yeah, I've just got a funny sneaker about Huddersfield winning this. I just think they're just quite hard to break down. They've done it before. Yeah, I'm a bit there on Huddersfield. So you've had a good.
The main
season,
thing you don't want to get against Huddersfield with their record in the playoffs is a penalty shootout, because they will win it.
Oh yeah, they love
their
penalty.
Their penalty record in the playoffs is absolutely exceptional. Right, back to Fulham news, Peter. Two new contract extensions, 1 year each, for Neeskens Cabano and Tim Ream. I don't think Neeskens is a surprise. He's been a key member of the team this season. His amount of appearances and goal contributions has dwindled as the season goes on. He started like an absolute train and has not finished the season in quite such blistering form, but easily warrants a contract and a good option off the bench for us in the Premier League. Tim Ream, though, is the surprise. We've all assumed that he wouldn't be here next season. We've definitely all assumed he won't be starting at the very least next season, but I like it. I just think it makes sense. And whilst a move to the MLS or retirement also could have been on the cards, when someone plays 46 or starts 46 out of 46 games for you, to then not have them next season did feel a bit odd.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, both have had excellent seasons, both deserve it. Obviously, that meriting and deserving a contract in football, which is obviously a very harsh industry, does not necessarily mean you'll make the squad the following year. But I think when you assess where Fulham are at and what they want to do in the summer, it doesn't really make too much sense to cut Tim Ream, essentially. Unless, of course, in like with Dennis Odoi, he wants to go. It's a good opportunity, more stability, longer term, whatever. Then maybe that's a different angle entirely. But if he does still want to be there and he still wants to compete, and I think he said recently in an interview that he, you know, feels he can go for a few more years yet. So if he feels he needs that position, as a squad member, we all know the value he brings to Fulham, both off the pitch, and we've seen on the pitch that Marco Silva is clearly a big fan of him. He speaks extremely highly of him, and to have that a player who is as professional as Tim Ream is, who is as respected as Tim Ream is in the dressing room, I think is massively important. Because, you know, you look at, and I sort of touched on this in the piece, you know, the last two times Fulham went up, it's two different teams. You know, it's two different teams that Fulham have sort of created off the back of the summer windows.
Yeah.
And there are definitely plus sides to this. You know, there's no, you know, it's not like we're saying that the recruitment when they went up 2 years ago, while it was late and that caused problems, the team that Fulham built should have stayed up. But you want to build on something, especially a title-winning team. You know, this is a team at the peak of their powers. I feel like there is a stronger spine there, and you want to make sure that you have the right assets. I mean, I don't think Tim Ream is going to be a starting player next year. I don't think anyone feels that he'll start 38 Premier League matches. But to have him there as an option who knows how Silva plays, knows the system, knows the club, knows the squad, it makes sense. Especially when you look at the other centre-halves. You know, your Alfie Mawson, your Michael Hector, still not confirmed what their situations will be. Their contracts are up. I know that Hector has an option, but they haven't played in the Championship. So from their point of view, are they going to play in the Premier League? Probably not. So for them, at their age, they're probably thinking, I probably should be looking to get out and get gamed. So then suddenly you're left with Tosin Adrabaya, if you get Tim Ream go as well, and Terence Kongolo, who hasn't played for ages, needs games himself, won't be in the Premier League, you'd expect. know, that's a lot of players you've got to bring in all of a sudden. So yeah, it make, for me, it makes perfect sense. And Niskin Scabano as well, you know, he's had the best season, and a similar thing, you know, off the field, we can see how popular he is with fans, and the same applies in the dressing room. So for me, yeah, I agree. It makes sense.
I mean, Jack, Tim Ream would be about the 20th oldest player in the Premier League as it stands right now. You look at the list of oldest Premier League players, and there are players older than Tim Ream who are starting most weeks. Now, a lot of them are very high caliber players. We're talking Thiago Silva, Ronaldo, Fernandinho, James Milner.
And Fernandinho is on his way back to Brazil to see out his career there, by all accounts, pretty much.
Yeah, but he's 37. Look, I'm just putting it out there, a bit of devil's advocate. First game of the season, it's Tim Ream and Tosin. Are you terrified?
No. I'm not terrified. It depends who we're playing. Obviously, if we're playing Manchester City and Erling Haaland, then I'm going to be terrified no matter who's going to be during that back line. Look, I spent most of the last two seasons with Fulham in the Premier League terrified no matter who was starting, right? So ultimately, I don't see if you can chuck that at anyone. I'm not sure if that's anything to do with it. It's about building a system that works. It's about adapting to the rigors of the Premier League. I think that Tim Ream, personally, from my kind of point of view, is a glorious footballer in a team that has the ball that much, because he's able to utilize his passing range and dictate games from the back. You know, he has that ability to split teams open, to play passes, to carry, to wander forward with the ball at will, to release players. I think he's been a wonderful footballer for Fulham. And a wonderful servant to the club. And I'm really, really glad he signed a contract, because I think that this dressing room needs leadership. And I think he provides that on a serious level. I do wonder how that kind of element of the game, the elements he's strongest at, in my opinion, translate into a team that doesn't have as much of the ball, that is, you know, doesn't dominate games possession wise, territory wise, and therefore is playing a little bit more on the back foot. I haven't seen that yet play to in Tim Ream's strengths, but that's not to say that it can't happen. It's just to say that I haven't seen it. So yes, I'd be concerned if that was the back two starting, but I think I'm going to be concerned whoever it is. You know, they've shown this year that they're a good partnership. They work well together. But do Fulham need to push on in those areas? Perhaps. But that's not a slight on Tim Ream or his ability or what he brings to this football club. I just wonder if the style of play that we're going to have to adopt and have to adapt to in the Premier League will suit him quite as much as the one we have seen in the Championship.
And Peter, we mentioned Niskin Scabano. As I said, his goal contributions, the amount of time he spent on the pitch, has gone down over recent weeks. I thought he played particularly well against Sheffield United when he came on, by the way, on Saturday. That was a small side point. He was causing them a few problems down the left. Admittedly, they were 4-0 up and had one eye on next Saturday in the playoffs by that point. And I don't think they were really trying massively by then, but he did come on and do well. He's another one, though, that I'd be surprised to see him starting, particularly with the likes of Mana Solomon linked to us. It might not be where Niskins wants to be, being an impact sub, but he is a good option off the bench, as we saw literally on Saturday. I imagine that's going to be more of his role. Of course, time will tell.
Yeah. He's a very good one-on-one, and I think he's different to Wilson in terms of profile as a winger. As you say, you know, Fulham will strengthen. They're in talks with Shakhtar about Mana Solomon. So again, it's another good option to have. You know, it can be a long season, injuries happen. And I think, again, he knows the way Silva likes his team to play. And I think everything that comes with him being in that squad means it makes sense, you know. And what's to say? And of course, it's difficult, and the step up is massive to the Premier League, but we haven't seen Niskin Scabano in the Premier League, really. So, as in playing consistently in the way he has under Silva. So, I'm not saying he's going to come in and rip it up, but that's not to say that he can't hold his own at that level. So, another one that makes sense. I thought he did okay when he came on. I mean, it was, I think, where Fulham lacked against Sheffield United was actually missing Tosin from the back. And, you know, when Jack was talking about the importance of centre-halves to Fulham's system, they're hugely important, both in terms of bringing the ball forward and finding spaces, and then when needed, going long. And I think they just lacked being able to switch the ball. And I think when, the amount of times Fulham tried to switch from centre right or right to left, where Cabano had that space, they just never quite seemed to make those passes stick as much. So, but yes, yeah, going back to Cabano, I think, again, it makes sense. And it's the off-field stuff as much as on-field. And it's a squad game. You know, you move him on, you bring someone else in, and, you know, they've got to gel, they've got to get in quick.
And other players out of contract this summer. All of this, by the way, in a piece that Peter released on Monday, kind of looking at the state of Fulham right now, is John Mikel Seri. He's out of contract. Michael Hex is out of contract. Alfie Mawson, Fabry, Cyrus Christie, Steven Sessegnon, and Tyrese Francois. Out of all of those, John Mikel Seri, the most likely to stay on.
Yeah, Seri wants to stay. When I wrote the piece, and it hasn't been, hadn't been a conclusion yet, or at least one that I could report. So it'd be interesting to see what he does. You know, he's got that option. So again, someone who could offer something in midfield. I feel like midfield is really critical for next year and for what Silva will want to do. And then you know, there are others in there as well. We talked about Hector and Mawson, and I think, you know, I can't see Fabry staying. Cyrus Christie's going to leave, and yeah, we'll see on the other ones as well. So Seri's had such a good season, and I suppose if he has the right players around him, he will do well. And again, it comes back to what Jack was saying earlier, because it's a different game. It is a different game. He's not going to have necessarily the same time. Fulham are not going to have necessarily the same amount of the ball. It was interesting speaking to Seri after the Forest game, and he talked about how he obviously used to be an eight, and that being a six was sort of a new sort of role for him, really. And that he enjoyed spraying the passes and dictating the tempo of it. Obviously in the Premier League, it will be different. And I think it depends on those around him, how you get the best out of Seri. And I think that also applies to Tom Cairney. I think we talked about how they can be similar in profile, but in different areas of midfield, in different roles in midfield, at least under Silva. So yeah, and I wonder then if that comes into the broader conversation about what Fulham do in terms of their recruitment and who they look to go for. So I'm sure there are talks this week with Seri and those whose contracts are up, because these are important decisions that need to be made soon. And I'm sure we'll know a little bit more very soon.
Yeah. And congratulations, by the way, to Tom and his partner, Abby. They had their second child the other day, Brody, and all looks healthy and well. So congratulations to both of them. What a week, hey? Scoring the 100th goal and the goal that set us on the way to winning the title, lifting a trophy and then having a kid at the end of the week. I think that was definitely one they will remember.
Yeah,
for a little time to come. Right, we'll take a break there. Afterwards, we're going to get into silly season. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy James here with Jack Collins and Peter Rutzler. Right, silly season. Peter, your list that you talked about before the podcast, you said that you're compiling a list of everyone that Fulham has been linked to in the transfer market, and the number stands, remarkably, on the 11th of May at 32 players. Do you want to go through all of them one by one, or should we pick out some highlights?
I mean, the thing is, I don't really want to say anyone because it might get picked up by people thinking that these are actual links that I've sort of come up with.
So these are just rumors that you'd like.
They're literally every rumor in the world. So, I don't know, man. I mean, you can just pluck a name out and I can just say if it's on the list or not, do that.
Anna Solomon.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, he's in talks with Fulham. So, I mean, that one's a bit more substantive.
So, I mean, are we expecting that one possibly to be done at the beginning of the transfer window on June the 10th? Is that kind of the expectation that it could, I mean, not putting you know, a gun to your head and telling me whether it's yes or no. I'm just saying, you know, is that the first one that you would expect as a betting man to come through the door?
There's the one we know about. You know, my understanding is that, you know, this seems pretty advanced. It's just not done yet. So I would expect so, but you never know with these things. You never know. So they can drag on, things change, circumstances always happen. But yeah, that's the one that's in the pipeline anyway, as it stands.
Jack, any transfer rumours that you'd like to pick out that you've noticed in the past week or so that have kind of tickled your fancy? There's plenty swirling about, as we mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, there's a strong rumour that Liverpool are signing a new right back, which does seem to suggest that Nico Williams might be surplus to requirements there. Now, that doesn't mean, obviously, that Fulham are going to sign him, because I'm sure there are plenty of people after the services of a young fullback who can play on both sides and has proved himself, especially going forward, pretty much every time he's played. So, you know, there's that to consider. One I quite like is Josh Cullen at Anderlecht. Fulham have been linked to not linked to making an offer, but linked to have been watching him and keeping an eye on him in a couple of games now. Full Republic of Ireland international, which is obviously nice. But equally, when you look at Cullen, I think he's the kind of player that Fulham could do with. He is a busy number eight with a little bit of a creative streak in him, but ultimately someone who's going to buzz around and get the job done in midfield. He's a player you can kind of rely on in the midfield. Not quite a Harrison Reed in terms of what he produces on the field. He's not quite as buzzy, so should we say, as Harrison Reed is around the base of those midfield, but a player who's comfortable getting stuck in, making tackles, winning the ball back, recycling, and also decent on it. Good passing ability on him as well, especially in short ranges. So yeah, I like Josh Cullen a lot. Obviously, someone who was at West Ham and took a bit of a gamble in his career, went off to Anderlecht. Since then, has, you know, become a full international. Seen his career tracked by quite a lot of clubs. So Fulham's interest piqued my interest. That's one that I think would be a relatively shrewd signing. Probably wouldn't cost all that much.
Yeah, well, central midfielder would definitely make sense. And, you know, we talked about, as I mentioned before, how important midfield will be. And, you know, that is a position Fulham want to strengthen. At the moment, I think they're looking at least five new additions. And that's at least, and you know, this is when we're at this point, you know, it's not like they will get five. That is it. Nothing more, nothing less. It looks like an at least. And I think some of the priority type positions that I've been aware of are, as you can almost predict them, I suppose, but from what the conversations are, it sounds like centre back, right back, obviously with Nico Williams, someone they would want to keep if they can, central midfield, which includes a Fabio Carvalho replacement from what I understand. So that was quite an interesting topic. I know we talked about whether Fulham will try and get an eight or a couple of eights, some bit more physicality, but it seems like Fulham want to see if they can get a player in a mould of Carvalho, which of course won't be easy. A winger, and, you know, the Solomon and possibly a keeper as well. So there is that sort of reflects a quality over quantity type approach to the window. And with any new promoted side, it's why you're going to get so many rumours. And because of Fulham's track record before it, It only adds to it. But so central midfield definitely is something they'd look to, and it looks pretty unlikely that Anguissa is coming back. I don't think there's an expectation that he will. I think there's an expectation that Napoli will exercise their option to buy clause because of how well he's done. And I don't think that'll be a surprise to anyone.
And also, I think with Anguissa, and they talked about this again on the Monday podcast, for me, I think he's a classy player. Would he do a job for us? Absolutely. Would I like to see him back in an ideal world in this team? Yes, that would be wonderful. But I also do just think it's water under the bridge. And I think it's best for all parties if he moves on. I don't think you can, for the sake of the morale of the squad, just keep buggering off for championship seasons and keep getting back into the first team for the Premier League. I think it's so important to keep the morale of this squad up, and not saying that they don't like Andre Frank, but I just think for me personally, cut ties, get a bit of money for him from Napoli. It's not as much money as we paid for him, but get some off the books. I think it seems like a sensible transfer for all involved. But,
reports in Italy now saying that that's, you know, very close to being a done deal. So that's good, isn't it? In your regard, that's good.
Thank you for the memories, though. Millwall away will live long in the memory.
There's definitely a what if with Anguissa, though, isn't there? Quite clear. Yeah. He's a really talented player. And if you just think, you know, obviously that first season, it was difficult for everyone. But if you gave him a platform to settle, you know, then Fulham would have had a really impressive player that could have grown and developed, and we'd see more of him. Instead, we've just seen the flashes, haven't we, in the two Premier League seasons, because you can't be excelling in the way he is at Napoli and has done previously at Villarreal and not be a good player. So, yeah. And we'll see what the fee is as well. I know the reports are around 15 million euros, aren't they, in Italy, and which seems low for someone, you know, of his quality, but we'll see.
I mean, Leicester away in the behind closed doors season, he was exceptional, but Millwall away this season when he came on and just started flicking it over everyone's head was a memory. You know, we might later on in a couple of weeks, we'll probably do like memories of the season and all of that. And definitely that one for me just came on and just looked like it was like Pele, like stepping onto a championship pitch. It was exceptional stuff. And there was a real expectation that he might stay at that time. We thought, oh my God, imagine how many points would we have got if we'd have had Frank Zambo and Giza Jack?
1,000 points.
We'd have won every game.
Points, yeah.
Oh, it would have been sensational. If you want to read more on Peter's piece, kind of looking ahead to what Fulham are trying to build next season, there's some really interesting comments from Marco Silva about how he's happy with the platform he's already created, but he's looking to build on. It's all in Peter's piece that was released on Monday in The Athletic. You can sign up right now by going to theathletic.com/Fulham Pod, and you can get The Athletic for £1 a month for the first 6 months if you haven't signed up already. What a summer smashing deal that is. And another piece that you've released, Peter, today in The Athletic is looking at Alexander Mitrovic. You've written it jointly with Mark Carey, who is The Athletic's stats guru. And man, this is a piece. I absolutely loved this. The headline is one that you might have to fall on your sword for in 10 months' time, but it's why Alexander Mitrovic is ready to shine in the Premier League at last. I can't wait. Well, no, I can wait to see this on @CursedFootball come April. But I agree with everything that was said, and it's all about how Alexander's role has subtly changed his positions on the pitch and everything he's doing, all the build-up, and it's confirming what we've kind of talked about all season. So I'll let you take it away with a bit of a description about what this piece outlines.
Yeah, one for, you know, things that precede an unfortunate event kind of thing, I suppose, if it doesn't happen. But, you know, if it doesn't happen, and I think I do make the point in the piece that, you know, it does feel like Fulham and Mitrovic's fates are sort of intertwined a little. But I think that there's two sides to this, the piece. Obviously, it's breaking down how he's been doing so well under Silva. And we've talked about it extensively, you know, the fact that he links the play and there's more to his game than the ridiculous number of goals. But, you know, he scored 43 goals and was overperforming his XG. He's ruthless. It shows his confidence in front of goal. We've seen that even if you wanted to take a small example, it's just his penalties. You know, we talked about Mitrovic on penalties and he doesn't miss them. And it's all of that together gives you a player who's 27 in his prime. This is definitely his best shot at the Premier League with a manager he clearly loves, playing in a system that works for him. You know, obviously next year is going to be very different. This is going to be a different style of play, as Jack was saying before. And that definitely, you know, in reference to Tim Ream, that applies to Mitrovic massively so. Fulham will be 30 to 40 yards further back. They will need to do more off the ball work. And it's how Fulham can get the best out of him. And if they continue to use the platform that they've created, adapt it, whatever, and they try and use Mitrovic as basically the key, because Fulham will need someone to hit double digits of goals. And I don't see a reason why he can't do that. And also with this piece, it was nice just to go back over some of his Premier League seasons, which the numbers aren't great. They're not as good as you want them to be. But, you know, we discussed context, but there is context for every single season. You know, he still scored 11 in 2018-19. 2015-16, got a reputation for a hothead for his red card, still scored 9 and then started 22 Premier League games. So there is clearly, like, there is a perception of Mitrovic, and I think he'll want to put it right in the same way that Fulham will want to ditch the yo-yo tag. But at the same time, as you mentioned, with falling on your sword, if it doesn't happen, then that's just going to continue. But if it is to happen, it will happen now, because you feel like everything is in place, because everything has fallen into place, and that's why he's had the season that he's had.
One thing that I always think gets lost slightly, Jack, in the Mitrovic numbers chat, and with the 43 goals this season, there's been a few games where Fulham have run away with it and Mitrovic has got the 5th or 6th goal. But how many goals for Fulham have been absolutely crucial? The amount of points he's won this season has been enormous. And next year, I don't know, he's going to get judged on whether he gets 10, 15 or 20 or 5 Premier League goals. But for me, and look, it's always nice, the numbers, and the record has been fun this year for him to break that. That's been extraordinary. But we can get lost a little bit in numbers. And you look at someone like Ivan Toney, who's got about 12, 2 of them are hat-tricks. Like, he hasn't won enormous amount of points with his goals for Brentford. The most important thing next season is that Mitrovic wins us points. It's not about whether he gets a dozen goals or 8 goals. If he wins us important games that gets us towards survival, that's the main thing. And I think we've all just got to remember that it isn't, you don't get any points because Mitrovic has scored a few extra goals.
No, and I do appreciate that. I think there's something in the fact that if your team is geared around a central focal point, that central focal point needs to work, right? That it's as simple as that in some ways. Yes, of course, you need the rest of the team to work around him. But so much of what Fulham do is centered around, it's hardwired, I would say, around Alexander Mitrovic. Now, that's not just goals, but it's a pretty big part of it. And the fact is that, you know, yes, he's become a creator. Yes, he's dropping deeper. All of these things suggest that he is a more rounded player than he ever has been. And that's going to help going into next season. But you still can't, you know, come away from the fact that he scored over 40% of Fulham's goals, you know, this season. And he's going to need to do so again next season if Fulham are going to have any chance of survival. Yes, you can share the goals around. Yes, there is important where the goals come. But ultimately, it's going to come down to whether we can cut it or not. And that's going to be massively to do with not just how many he scores, but how he performs in general. I'm with Peter and Mark. This article made me smile this morning because it's two of the nicest people in football working on a piece together. I really enjoyed it. I saw it come up and I was like, ooh, yeah, I could read that. That sounds good. But, you know, you do look at that and you think, okay, the situation and the platform, you know, as Silver said, is there for Fulham to improve, for Mitrovic to improve, to show everybody that this is not I'm stuck between the Premier League and Championship. I'm not Cameron Jerome, right? This is a player who has performed on the highest.
I am not Cameron.
To be fair, that's a statement I'd be looking to make if I was a Premier League footballer. But ultimately, you're looking at a player who has, you know, come up big on the international stage, whose scoring record for Serbia is unquestionable, whose commitment, I think, to Fulham and to how Fulham play right now is unswerving. And it's going to be massive how much he improves next season, both on a goal scoring front and on a performance front, if Fulham are going to survive in the Premier League.
One little graph from this article I found particularly interesting, Peter, was Mitrovic's touches on the ball. And you've got a table kind of the pitch, and then the pitch is divided into squares. And it outlines that Mitrovic's role has become a lot more central, a little bit more to the right, but a lot more central, particularly in this like center circle area. There's a clear increase in the amount of touches, but weirdly, still in the center, actually in front of the penalty box, his amount of touches have either gone down. Of course, in the box, his touches have gone up as well, which is not surprising given the amount of chances that he's been given this season. But Silva's obviously said to him, stay narrow, stay central. The most important place for you to be on this pitch is in the middle kind of third, if it was drawn into kind of vertical lines.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked before on here about when Mitrovic goes into wide areas, things aren't really going that well generally. Where he's at most effective is quite clearly in the penalty area. You know, all of his goals are in the penalty area. That's his home. That's where he's that's where defenders don't want him to be. And that is an interesting sort of reflection, isn't it? The fact that in that almost midfield, central attacking midfield sort of zone, essentially, he doesn't pick up as many touches in there. He's actually a little bit deeper, and actually one of the graphs shows that he's had more touches in his own half, like 3 more touches per game, which is actually a lot more than you'd think for a striker. But you can see that with, I suppose you see it week in, week out on the eye test, and the way that he drops deeper into midfield when opposition sides go man for man, he's then dropping in as a spare player, can then link the play that way. It's part of those open place patterns that Fulham will work on to create space for midfield runners like Fabio Carvalho, like Harry Wilson in particular. You know, they've got 13 goal combinations, which is pretty very decent number that between two players and Cabano and whoever else is in midfield making the runs. So that's just part of the way he fits into Silva's system, and he's clearly embraced that and is improved with that, and that's reflected in his assist numbers and some of those key passes that we've seen. And there's a couple of sort of grabs in the piece which sort of show it in real life, as it were. It was interesting, Jack's point, because, you know, Fulham come into the season, you have a choice. You either back Mitrovic, build around Mitrovic, or you move away from Mitrovic entirely, which is what Scott Parker tried to do last year. And then Mitrovic is out of favour, and you don't use him, and you're using Ivan Cavallero up front. And it didn't work, ultimately. Fulham's biggest problem was conversion rate. Everything else seemed to work. Getting the ball in the back of the net was the problem. But this time around, you have a system that seems to suit him. You have a style of play that suits him. It's not going to be the same next year. It can't be, because when you're playing Manchester City or Liverpool or Tottenham or whoever else, you're going to spend periods of the game without the ball. So how they use Mitrovic in that point will be really, really interesting. But you've got to think about how you're going to score goals. And if you go all in on Mitrovic, you have to build around him. And it's that platform. And when you see how Fulham are right now, and you see the number of goals Mitrovic is scoring, the confidence he has. You know, it's interesting because one of the other graphics was his over and under performance with XG, which shows in the Premier League, he underperforms. He should be scoring more goals from the chances that are created for him. But in the Championship, he overperforms, which is it's an easy division. Sure, partly. But there's also a confidence element there, you know, a willingness to take on more difficult chances, to shoot on sight, you know, take those opportunities. So if you can get a confident Mitrovic, with still having that supply line, then you will score goals. And whether Fulham can create that, we'll have to see.
There is, you know, the plausible alternative, although I think it's unlikely that you find Mitrovic a strike partner. You know, someone who is a different type of player to Mitrovic, you know, a nippy forward who likes to run off the shoulder, who might benefit from flick-ons and things. But I think that would involve a real shift of styles. You know, we have seen Silva shift to a 2 up front at times this season, mostly when he's chasing a game. It's not unheard of. I'm sure that Fulham will be looking at this area in order to try and consider what might happen in situations like this, especially because we're more likely to be chasing the game next year than we were this year. And therefore, maybe someone who works alongside Mitrovic rather than having that kind of Mooney's Mitrovic switch, which didn't really work, and maybe kind of letting Mooney's go on loan to find someone, you know, to basically groom him as a successor to Mitrovic might be something that within the realms of possibility.
Well, I've heard that as Marco and his team have taken holiday this week, he's brought my book with him, how to win from 1-0 down. And he's having a read of it. So he doesn't want to make any decisions until he's kind of like gone through the book in full and you know, had time to reflect on his learnings from the book.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You've written the foreword, Jack.
I have written the foreword, apparently. That's good.
Peter, your copy, I don't know if it's got lost in the post or something like that, but yeah, it's on your way to you.
Okay, yeah. I'm glad I sent you the wrong address then.
Available in all good bookshops. Right, we'll take a break there. Afterwards, we've got some emails and this will catch on. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Peter and Jack. And as ever, just to say that this podcast is backed by the lovely people at The Athletic and also you guys who support us over on the Fulhamish community via Leveler Monthly. We couldn't do this podcast without you. It's a really fun place. If you'd like to support the pod, keep the content going, the videos, the articles, the podcasts, etc., please do consider backing us monthly over on the Fulhamish community. It massively helps. And if you want to join the Telegram channel as a little bit of a bonus for that, then you are more than welcome. It's good fun on there. But of course, not for everyone. If you just like to back us without a Telegram pinging all the time, then you're more than welcome. All the details are on our website, fulhamish.co.uk/support. Right, let's go into some of your emails before we do This Will Catch On. And the first one is from Mark. I'll go to you on this one, Jack. He says, "Hi, Fulhamish team. Hope you're all well. I'm sure you are after last night." I think he wrote this after the Luton game. "Loving the pods and the YouTube videos. Great work. Question for all you guys regarding the club badge. Would be interested in getting your view on a badge revamp. I particularly like the more traditional badge and would like to see a nod to the actual Fulham crest. Many thanks from Mark." I feel like this is a periodical question.
It comes up every 2 years, right?
About the club crest. I've seen no interest in Fulham redesigning the badge, but it's getting on 20 years. We've seen other Premier League teams kind of adopt a slightly more modern, a more sellable badge. Our neighbours up the road in Hounslow redid their badge, I think maybe last season, if not the season before, certainly not that long ago. Would you be anti a change? Would you support a change? I know I like certainly think you can't do much worse than we've got right now.
I'm in a small minority that doesn't really mind the badge. You know, all these clubs have changed their logos in order to be more, you know, marketable. Well, yes, Fulham were forced to change our logo in some ways because of the fact that it was also the badge, you know, the crest was that of Hammersmith and Fulham as well.
I've heard on the grapevine that that's
not
that's
true.
An old wives' tale.
But even if it's not, basically Fulham were the first to do this. We're the first to go and make a badge that is drawable, that, you know, when a kid is drawing a picture of their favourite footballer at 5 years old, they could probably have a go at the Fulham badge. You know, it's very difficult to have a go at the old badges that are on the Demon Internet shirts. I don't think I could draw them if they were sat in front of me and I had some tracing paper. So like, you're looking at, that's why I think Fulham chose the badge design we did. Everyone seems to be going circular now. I'm not quite sure why, but it does feel like that's the path they're going. You look at someone like Juventus who changed their badge to the two J's not too long ago. I think what you're seeing is Fulham are actually just ahead of the mark on this trend. And we've had 20 years of it and 20 years of people complaining about it. I don't mind it. If they want to redesign the badge, they will, but careful what you wish for, because I have a funny feeling that a revamped badge would be further away from what people want and more back and further into this kind of more simple, you know, kind of clip art versions that we're seeing of clubs around the world.
Mm. Although I challenge you to try and draw the FFC sideways and get it symmetrical. It's not the easiest.
Well, there you go. I'm not particularly good with a pen in hand or a quill or a paintbrush or whatever. So I will leave the kind of written artistics to other people.
I'll slightly disagree that I think you can do a lot better. I think careful what you wish for is a good point, though, because as you say, anything could just get an awful lot worse. And yeah, I guess Fulham maybe were at the start of a trend that I'm not 100% sure that is like something that we should be too pleased about. Basically, we were at the start of a trend of creating modern shite badges.
Yeah, but this is how the world
trailblazers
works.
Pioneers of making crap badges. Peter, do you have any opinion on Fulham's badge? I imagine not.
I mean, it's all about brand, isn't it? I mean, you change your badge to improve your marketability, and Jack said it's very simplistic. And it's Fulham's Premier League years were with this badge, and I wonder how much that carries weight in terms of identity and knowing who Fulham are. For me, when you change a badge, it has to be something that's fan-led or fan-consulted. You can't, you know, there has to be that dialogue. You saw when Leeds came out with a badge, that didn't go down too well, did it?
Forgot about that.
That it's, you know, there has to be that sort of dialogue. I mean, I don't particularly have an opinion either way, really, on the badge. You guys will have more of an opinion than I would. As long as there is that fan consultation, then go for it. But I think it's a brand thing, isn't it? And I'm glad Jack pointed out the Juve example, because it's, you know, Fulham are way ahead of the curve on that one.
Yeah, that Juventus one is a bit of a rotter. One more question from John Witham. Says, hi guys, with promotion in the bag and the championship coronation complete, maybe there's an opportunity to talk about what's on television. The Apple TV Plus programme, Ted Lasso, all about an American football coach brought to England to be a proper football manager. While the show's AFC Richmond are fictional and they film it at Selhurst Park, there are some definite similarities to Fulham. Firstly, their chief rivals are Brentford. The club was founded in 1897 as opposed to 1879. They hadn't beaten Everton away since the 60s until a relegation threatened side did it. A veteran midfielder who ends up being a pundit, brackets Danny Murphy, then part of the coaching staff, Scott Parker. And then he says, Craven Cottage itself is used as a stand-in for Goodison Park in season one, with no attempt made to cover up the visible FFC logos. I have seen a photo of it. It is a bit weird how they try and claim that Craven Cottage is Goodison Park and make absolutely no effort in the edit to kind of get rid of the Fulham badges.
I think that's all part of the humour.
The show has found a good balance of American feel-good comedy and English piss-taking, in my opinion anyway. I'm curious to hear if anyone has seen it. Thanks for the magnificent work this year, and that's from John Witham. I haven't seen Ted Lasso. Jack, I know you have. Did you notice these similarities that John did?
Yeah, I did. Although I think that, you know, there's about five teams drawing similarities to their clubs as well. So I'd imagine the writers have basically done what they expected. They've probably roped in teams of our kind of standing, a little bit of, you know, the teams around us, Palace what being one of them, to be like, oh, this represents us, we can get involved with it. And that's, imagine, a very clever little marketing ploy. There are definite similarities, but more than anything, Ted Lasso is absolutely incredible viewing. It's so good. And I think I was skeptical. I'll be honest. I was really skeptical of what it was and what it was going to, you know, what it was going to be. And I was like very, very kind of not sure that this is going to work, but it's really funny, really, really funny, and like quite heart-rendering by the end of it as well. So I would genuinely recommend anyone that doesn't, so much so that when they asked us to be part of the promotion campaign for the second season of it when I was still at BR, it was like one of the best things. I couldn't stop smiling all day. I was so happy to be part of that second promotion season of it. So yeah, I would really, really recommend. I'm no longer that job, so there's no reason for me to be pushing this, aside from the fact that I think it's just a genuinely excellent TV show. And if you're missing football this summer, something that will give you a wry smile on your face, I think.
Yeah, I need to just like get the trial for Apple TV. It's the only reason I haven't watched it. It's very much one of the things I want to watch. I just haven't got that Apple TV. Peter, have you seen it?
I haven't. I've seen clips of it. It's one I want to watch. But isn't there like a clip of that Ted Lasso one where he says that Fulham fans should go home and chase a referee or something? I've seen that pop
some,
up on.
There's some really funny lines, and there are moments, but it's just genuinely a very, very good show.
Peter, while we're here, any other big TV shows you'd recommend for the summer break while there's no Fulham?
Yeah, I'm just sort of dipping in and out of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia at the moment, but that has a very specific audience, so it may not be to everyone's taste, but good value. Also, mainly because I now know who Rob McElhenney is, because obviously with the Wrexham stuff, I actually know who he is now.
Yes. A very, very nice man, by the way, Rob McElhenney, very funny man as well. And I think they're in the National League playoffs, aren't they, Wrexham? This summer. So good luck to Wrexham. What am I watching at the moment? I'm watching something that's so Sammy James. I'm watching a French property show on Netflix called
Away. I think it's like Away with You. Agency deploy to that.
Yeah,
Away with You.
I quite enjoyed it. It's a bit of trash reality TV, but it's French, so I feel like I'm paying homage to the university roots. Right, this will catch on to end. Jack said last week that Maurice's brilliant Harry Wilson, Mitrovic, and Niskins remix has saved This Will Catch On. I'm wondering if today may be the day that This Will Catch On gets cancelled again. So we've got definitely two, potentially three if there's time. But the first two today are both on a sea shanty vibe. We have two sea shanties for you.
Okay.
So the first one here is from Simon Patey. He says, was listening the other week when it was commented there are no team charts as opposed to individual players. So I drafted this and he called it This Won't Catch On. So it's just a small sea shanty for Fulham. I'll get your thoughts on it.
My father made me Fulham fan from birth. The cottage by the Thames is where we play our games. Stand up high in the hammy, noble squads I see. Steady course for the win, boys. How many goals?
What? I think the thing is, when they're not set to tunes, you obviously know, it's harder to kind of... Right,
well, it's never catching on, right? I guess that's why he called it This Won't Catch On.
It's just, there's like no rhymes at all. Like none. It's just like, all right. I thought if you're going to do a sea shanty, there's going to at least be like a heave-ho catchy chorus. But no, just words. Sort of vaguely set to a tune. I enjoyed it. It's like banging the table. That was my favorite part. What was yours?
Well, I could just imagine like Fisherman's Friends singing it outside the Hammersmith
Can
end,
you?
Maybe. I mean, it would be quite Fulham for Fisherman's Friends to come down to the cottage.
No, not for me, thank you.
All right, well, here's the second sea shanty. Anyway, it's like London buses, these sea shanties. You don't get any for the 6 months that we've been doing This Will Catch On, and two come along at once. This is from Ben Stupples in West Wickham. He says, hi, Fulhamish.
As in Wickham Wanderers or Wickham as in W-I-C-K-H-A-M?
As in Wickham Wanderers.
Oh, fair. I've been to the other West Wickham. There you go.
Oh, okay.
Interesting fact.
I didn't know that Wickham was big enough to divide it east and west. It's a little bit like me saying I'm from West Godalming. I am technically, but it sounds a little bit odd. But maybe Wickham's bigger than I realise.
I'm from West London, to be fair.
Well, that makes a bit more sense. It'd be like you said you're from West Hanwell, which is a little bit odd. Anyway, Ben says, hi, Fulhamish. Someone on the Telegram app, oh, thank you for being part of it, set a challenge to make a Fulham sea shanty. I didn't see that, but so I thought I'd have a go. I've listened to the podcast religiously.
It all makes sense now.
Despite an amazing season, one man is criminally overlooked for This Will Catch On. So here's my sea shanty for our hero, Alexander Mitrovic. Who knows, the chorus may catch on. He says, sorry for the poor recording quality and the slightly grizzled singing voice. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with the quality. It is quite long though, so strap yourselves in. Come on.
There once was a man called Mitrovic. He made the championship his bitch. He plays for Fulham FFC on the banks of the River Thames. Alexander Mitrovic, he scored the most goals in the championship. All hail Mitrovic, Fulham's number 9. He scored with his left and he scored with his right, and he made the championship look shite. He plays for Fulham FFC, the pride of London town. Alexander Mitrovic, he just destroyed the championship. All hail Mitrovic, 43 goal hero.
And this is the bridge.
This is quite good, to be fair. Right, I'm having quite a good time.
Alexander Mitrovic, he scored the most goals in the championship. All hail Mitrovic, Fulham's number 9. Alexander Mitrovic, he just destroyed the championship. All hail Mitrovic, 43 goal hero.
I think he's quite good.
That was good.
I thought you were going to be like, you say that this was real bad, but this is great. That was excellent.
I enjoyed it. It's not what I was expecting when I saw that email this morning.
No, that was great. I'm here for it. Really, really good.
the voice is brilliant for it. If he's not doing sea shanties as a career, then I think he needs to start.
Yeah, it was real good, real hearty vibes. That's what I was on about with the old heave ho choruses, right? That's what you want. That's what you're looking for something to cling on to. I had a good time. I enjoyed myself.
Was
excellent.
Good.
Well done.
So This Will Catch On isn't cancelled. I think we'll leave it there for today, though. But thank you, Ben. Thank you, Simon, for your suggestions. Hello at fulhamish.co.uk. There's a few weeks left. We'll be doing the charts, the end of season charts, in a couple of weeks. But there's still, at least one or two more podcasts to get your submissions for this season in. And who knows, maybe it does continue next season. I think it depends on how Fulham do. If we're getting battered like Watford are every week, I think it might not be so fun.
It just changes the tone of the...
They're not as good if we're losing every week.
So let's see. Dido every week.
Dido. I mean, wouldn't be opposed to a Dido. This will catch on. Yeah. If you can make something to White Flag by Dido, I'm all for it. Right. Thank you very much for listening today. There will be another podcast this time next week, another Thursday Club with myself, Peter and Jack. We're going to be doing podcasts probably now until the start of end of May, start of June, just once a week, doing a midweek podcast. There's just so much in terms of pre-season preparations, post-season reaction that I think that we've got plenty to be podding on and getting into at least until June, particularly with the Championship playoffs still happening and the Premier League concluding as well. But for today, thank you to my guest, Peter Rutzer. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Sammy. Always a pleasure.
And Jack Collins, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sammy. Appreciated.
Are you going to go maybe learn a sea shanty? Come up with
one. I might leave the sea shanty to those who are clearly very talented at doing so. So I'm happy. I'm happy.
You're more a poems man, not a sea shanty man.
I'm more a poems guy. Yeah. So we shall see. But
you could combine them. Maybe in your old age, when you've grown a beard and you live by the sea, maybe that's when you kind of like morph into.
I feel
sea
like
shanties.
My hair's too like jet black at the moment. I need it to be salt and pepper before I start thinking about sea shanties. Do you know what I mean?
You're a young man. There's time.
It's strapping hell.
There's a time for you to get into the sea shanties. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in a week. Until then, have a great one. Come you whites.
You whites.